Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So how would you feel about getting on an aeroplane that has no pilot? Well, buckle up, because the use of self-flying planes is probably closer than we all think. Kevin Byrne, retired Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Security and Safety Auditor, is with me on the line now to talk about just how feasible this would be. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Claire.
I think everyone shudders when they think about self-flying planes.
Indeed,
Really? What are your own thoughts on it?
I don't know. I couldn't believe that it's so advanced, because you know that to get in a commercial aircraft and fly passengers, you have to do a lot of training. We normally have two pilots on board. They're able to fly in and above clouds. They've got all these ratings. They're there for emergencies. And, you know, it's a very skilled job and always has been. And the demand now, apparently, for the next 10 years is 45,000 pilots. We need those pilots trained. There's a shortage at the moment. They're kind of well paid when they get qualified and so forth. But if we don't have them, the aviation expansion, which is coming back to well in advance of what it was in 29, will be hit by that. But I'm not sure if you can take the pilots out and replace them with artificial intelligence, because AI isn't all that intelligent when you examine what it does.
Well, you see, the technology might be there, or very close to being there.
Yes.
But will the public accept this?
I don't think so. I mean, look at where we are now. I was in London, you know, before Christmas, and they have, of course, driverless trains in the down the docklands and so forth, and that's been used elsewhere. They have them in airports, trains which have no drivers and that kind of thing, and that's becoming more common. But they do have a control centre which looks after every train. The trains are on rails and they go in one direction. We haven't yet got to the stage where people can take a bus from Dublin to Galway and have no driver on board, nor have we moved in the logistics field where the trucks will trundle along the motorway between various towns, you know, and have no drivers on board. So we have a lot of distance to go on the ground. The same is true of the maritime operations. Ships have, you know, captains and navigators on board and that kind of thing. And I can't imagine the dynamics involved in aviation. It's very fast, it's very fluid, weather affects it, and you're expecting an aircraft to take off from a small strip on the ground and land again many hours later. So we're not quite as far advanced as I think we might be.
But Kevin, when it comes to military aviation, the US military,
yes,
they've been using this for quite some time, haven't they?
Indeed, they have. And in fact, it was brought to mind recently over the Black Sea just last week. Sukhoi was buzzing this drone. The drone had the camera on board, and the pilot controlling that was back either in Cyprus or in Turkey, or maybe back in Nevada, which is where some of the things are relayed from. You know, we have a highly qualified pilot who can control the aircraft and is looking after the systems and so forth, and is able to make decisions. If you have passengers on board, they're a whole different bailiwick. They're talking about putting these things into cargo aircraft, and cargo is always treated a little bit different than the passengers, because, for example, you had to retire at 60 years of age as an aircraft captain flying passengers, but you could move on to the transport cargo version of that and fly until 65. So there was always a difference there. But then again, the small light aircraft, you know, they might be landing at airports that don't have all of the navigation aids. And where does that go then if you're expecting to land on a windy day or in the dark or through cloud or that kind of thing? It's quite a complex job.
But I would imagine, Kevin, that the aviation industry, the commercial side of it at least, would love this if it worked.
Oh, yes, they would, because you're immediately saving the pilots' salaries, which is quite a lot now. If there's a demand there for pilots, the salaries go up, so they're paying people more than they did before. And, of course, airlines would like to save $35 billion dollars a year, which is what they're going to have to pay in the next couple of years to keep aviation going. But on that basis, will the people, your customers, take it on board? I'm not sure when they look left and there's nobody in the cockpit, because there is no cockpit, there's a computer there. Would you be happy with it? I don't think so. It takes buy-in. Maybe it'll start like this. We'll have one pilot on board and we'll have another pilot monitoring on the ground in a central location in communication, available to assist in emergencies, because, of course, the pilots come into their own when a bit falls off the aircraft or there's a shutdown or it strikes birds or something happens and we have to make a decision. Artificial intelligence is not good at doing things that have not been programmed into it. In some cases, they ignore it, and that has happened with autopilots where they ignore emergencies. So there's a way to go.
Yeah, I suppose, though, we've come to accept a lot of things that we wouldn't have imagined,
yes,
even 10 years ago,
yeah,
that we would accept. And when a plane crashes, Kevin, does it,
yeah,
tend to be more to do with human error than technical faults with the plane?
That's an argument that's gone on for years now, and in the lectures I used to attend and used to give, we reckon about 76% of all accidents which end up as fatal accidents in aviation have a large element of human factors, as it's called. Perhaps somebody fixing the aircraft, designing the aircraft, flying the aircraft, or attending to the aircraft in some way make a mistake. It doesn't mean, though, that the computer will look after and eliminate all those faults, because don't forget, the artificial intelligence and the programs which would expect you to fly aircraft from point A to point B, you know, will have been programmed by humans, regardless of what else happens. So there can be errors in the software, and that's been proven once or twice before. Another factor, if I might just say, short-haul flights are the way to start off. I think one pilot and a second pilot looking after four or five flights on the ground. But would you be happy to get on an aircraft in, say, Heathrow Airport and fly for 16, 17 hours non-stop to Perth in a long-range Boeing 787 and have no pilots on board crossing all that water?
Yeah, I'd be happy. It'd be a push, all right, but then...
Yes.
And you know what? There will be people who have an existing fear of flying, and we know there are plenty of those people who just would not be able to cope with this, I'm sure. It would just be a step too far for those people.
And do you know that when we did some studies, some background studies in DCU, it's thought that as many as 10% of the population who fly, and there'll be probably 30 million or so going through Dublin Airport alone, 10% is 3 million people who are very, you know, upset by flying, who don't like it and are not happy with it at all. They expect expertise in loading the aircraft, in maintaining it, in flying it. They possibly couldn't get onto an airframe where there'd be nobody on board at all except the flight attendants to look after you and feed you and that kind of thing. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, you'd probably have to pay for, you know, you pay for a premium on a ticket with a pilot flying your plane as opposed to someone on the ground controlling it.
Indeed. It's one to follow. It will happen. I mean, we have autopilots. When they were first invented, people said it'll never work. We had then moving on to a thing called fly-by-wire, where the actual bits of that move on the aircraft, the ailerons and the elevators and so forth, were not connected by cables. That was taken on board. And then we had airframes made out of materials that are not metal. And everyone said there'll be a huge resistance to this. Not the case, because aviation does move on in leaps and bounds and makes it easier and safer. But aviation safety is at a premium. It has been the safest method of travel and mode of travel that we've had, and to keep that level of service, so to speak, we have to be very sure that leaving pilots off the flight deck would make it as safe as it can be and remain as safe as it has been for so many years.
You see, people listening to this now might think we're talking pie in the sky or pilots in the sky, but we I know that some of the unions have said this openly, that it is a threat to their industry and to their business and to their jobs.
Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? You know.
But I suppose that confirms to us that it is coming down the tracks.
It is, but as I said, until it happens on the ground, until you can look out on the M4 motorway and all these vehicles go past with no drivers on board and people are happy to do that and we're happy to put 40-foot containers on them and there are no accidents, or that all the systems involved will minimise the risk of an accident. As I said, aviation, when you're in the cockpit of an aircraft, I only have 500 flying hours, so I'm a novice as such. Nobody would take me seriously. But when you drop an aircraft down at 180 knots and you brake through the cloud, you want to see a runway, a small strip of tarmac right in front of you where it should be, and an emergency occurs, at least you've got two pilots who can decide what they have to do. I'm not sure if the emergency has not been programmed into the artificial intelligence, into the autopilot, it will know what to do. AI is good up to a point, but if it hasn't been seen before, it could be an emergency that is not programmed, and these happen from time to time. You have to have a mind behind the controls who can take action and save themselves and the aircraft.
Now, I want to talk to you about something else that's been in the headlines this week. These extraordinary claims by a whistleblower in a protected disclosure that poor standards of security at our airports could lead to a terror attack. What's your view on that?
I was very surprised by that because, of course, Dublin Airport is the jewel in the crown of our airports. You know, as I mentioned, perhaps 30 million people going through it, certainly if not this year, next year. There's 130 destinations out of Dublin from Ryanair, 13 go across the Atlantic with Aer Lingus, and we've got airlines coming in from places like Egypt and Dubai, Turkey, Iceland and Israel, and they all expect a certain standard of security. There's also a whole host of regulations to which the Irish have subscribed, and we know what they are. Some of them are not published because there's different training requirements. If you take a whole load of new staff, which I think was the case, having seen the chaotic scenes there last year, you would hope that they'd be trained, those people, the new people joining, would be trained to the certain standards, and that they'd be mentored and supervised by people who know the business. That's what we expect.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. Kevin Byrne there, who's a safety auditor in the aviation business. Just on that last issue, the DAA said that it is subject to regular independent national and international oversight of our compliance with stringent security requirements, and they're not aware of an investigation by the IAA into Dublin Airport in relation to a protected disclosure. Now, I just want to let you know that GP and mental health specialist Dr. Harry Barry will join me on the programme again tomorrow, and we're going to be talking again about relationship breakdowns, because we did this very recently and we were pretty much overwhelmed by the response that we got. So many people getting in touch saying after years on from the relationship breaking down, they still felt that they hadn't recovered, they weren't able to move on, it was having an impact on their day-to-day lives. So we've asked Harry to come back in again and take those questions and any new ones that you have. So if you have a question on relationship breakdowns, get in touch with us by email. It's todaycb@rte.ie. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.